put this in front of the reporter.
First, thank you very much for invitation to be able to come and attend this program. It's not going to make it too cool, is it? The AC?
Is it too cool?
Well, just as long as it's moderate. This is sort of like
22-20. No, 26.
No, 24 is fine. Yeah. This is like Rajdhani temperature. And then there's Air India temperature also. Hare Krishna. Yes, before we even start, I just wanted to thank everyone for this wonderful birthday present that you actually purchased for Kishori. Usually someone else doesn't thank the birthday present they give to another person, but in this case it was a really ideal present. Sometimes, well, whenever we're buying presents, we're thinking what will make that person the happiest. And what makes a devotee the happiest is what makes Krishna happy. And that Nitya Seva is certainly something that really contributes toward the service of Radha Shyama Sundar, and doesn't just make them happy, makes me happy, and so on. So it's a really wonderful, wonderful gesture. And then you can all follow it up by coming to, for those of you who haven't been to New Brajadam, coming to visit and seeing Radha Shyama in person. Unless you've been there, you haven't seen them. We call it the Radha Shyama experience, chanting Hare Krishna in front of their lordships. It's a very unique experience that at least it's hard to get elsewhere. Of course, that's in the beauty is in the eyes of the beholder, but it's always like that, that devotees have their Ishtadeva, their particular form of Krishna that manifests in to them in a unique and particularly attractive way that they don't necessarily see in other forms of Krishna, and it's the same Krishna. That's also part of Krishna's lila or Krishna's pastime. Just like there was one deity in Vrindavan whose name was Shakshi Gopal. This was a long time ago. This was like more than 800 years ago. And in order to, Shakshi means that he's a witness, in order to bear witness to the truthfulness of a Brahmin, he actually walked all the way to South India, all the way to Vijayanagar. So the deity walked. And eventually he ended up in Jagannath Temple, because King of Orissa then conquered that country, took the deity, put him in the temple. But at a certain point, the king was getting dreams from Lord Jagannath, and you know Jagannath was the presiding deity of Puri, and Jagannath was saying, "You have to get rid of this guy. He's eating all my sweets before they come to me." So they're both Krishna, and that's why if you go to, anybody been to Jagannath Puri? Yeah, so about 14-15 miles is Shakshi Gopalpur. So the king then built a temple and established a village away from the temple, so that one Krishna didn't interfere with the meals of the other Krishna. So this is called Beda Beda Tattva, simultaneously one and different. let's start with Bhagavad Gita. Om Gyan Timirandasya Gyanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaya Shri Guru Vena Maha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shiva Shari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I've been asked to just give a very general introductory talk to the Gita, and so I'll do just that. Bhagavad Gita, ultimately, you can speak about forever. Srila Prabhupada would also, amongst other things that he said, would say that I can solve any problem of the material world from the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita answers all questions of life. I saw some of the questions where it appears that Bhagavad Gita doesn't really address this. But it requires, it's like law. So you have to know how to actually apply the principles of law, to apply principles of precedent to certain circumstances, and it requires unpackaging. So Bhagavad Gita is only 700 verses. So compared to Srimad Bhagavatam, it's 18,000 verses. You know, all of the Puranas put together are 400,000 verses. The Vedic literature in its entirety is 100,000 times 100,000 verses. But still, Krishna says that Vedaishya sarve raham eva vedya Vedantavit vedakrit eva chaham. This is the summary of the Veda. So because it's summarizing, it's giving the essence of all Vedic literatures, therefore it's like a sutra, just like Vedanta Sutra. Sutras are short, concise, very compressed statements with a lot of knowledge pressed into them. And so it becomes, you have to actually be extremely qualified in order to be able to unpackage everything. So when you see the purports of Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada's purports aren't really just his thoughts on the verse, but Prabhupada is actually unpackaging the contents of the verse. And particularly he does it in a very unique way. He does it in a way that makes it relevant to people who are not conversant with Indian culture, who are not conversant with Vedas, who don't even necessarily in the beginning know who Krishna is. Let me start here. But this book is different, because what's the title of that book you have in front of you, madam? As It Is. Now, there's an implication to it being called As It Is. What's the implication?
It's just what it has. No opinion of anybody, no.
Correct.
Explaining it in like easier words, what actually it means.
Yes, in Krishna, yes.
From Krishna's.
But it also means that there's a lot of Bhagavad Gita's as it's not. So Prabhupada says that there are 700 editions, different, not editions, but 700 versions or commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita. And unfortunately, very often, Bhagavad Gita, because of its fame and because it's so well known, Bhagavad Gita has been used to further different aims. Different people have different ideologies. But Srila Prabhupada presented Bhagavad Gita, well, for two reasons. One is because it's the duty of every acharya to actually present a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. Why do you have to make a commentary when there's so many, and there are a lot of as it is commentaries? Because there's lots of room if you want to also move up. We've got a lot of space over here. And because times change, And not only time changes, language changes, terminology changes, social, political environment changes. So to make a presentation contextual, generally the same principles need to be elaborated upon in keeping with this desha kala patra. It's called time, place, circumstance. And therefore, it's always a tradition, for instance, in Srimad Bhagavatam, then Srimad Bhagavatam has a tradition of commentaries. The first Vaishnav commentary is Sridhar Swami, and up to Srila Prabhupada to date. And these are persons that go back again for over a span of 800 years. And although generally in terms of theology and philosophy, they're saying the same thing, but they have to keep making it relevant. So this is one reason why, this is the other reason why there has to be a Bhagavad Gita as it is that Srila Prabhupada had to make it relevant to the people of today's world who are not, they don't know Sanskrit, they don't know Vedic culture, they hardly know anything about Indian culture. So for Prabhupada, this was not just something for mainland India, this was his main preaching tool that he's taking around the world, that he had then ultimately distributed in or translated in 70 languages, and that there's over 500 million copies have been sold and distributed from Swahili, from Swahili to Chinese to Japanese to Russian to Hungarian to so many languages, and I don't know, over a dozen Indian languages as well. So these points, that to make it relevant to people today, to present it really, let Krishna speak for himself, and to elaborate means in the way that Krishna would elaborate on Krishna's own words. And because it's the duty of an acharya, it's a traditional, it's a standard thing. Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, Bhagavad Gita. Now Prabhupada didn't give a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, but he gave a commentary on the commentary of Vedanta Sutra, Vasyanam, Brahma Sutranam, which is Srimad Bhagavatam. So in this way, that's the Prabhupada fulfilled that need, that requirement of a Sampradaya Acharya. Okay, now let me just talk about the two main people, or the two main personalities, not people, of Bhagavad Gita, and they are Krishna and Arjuna. Well, in one sense, both are equally important. Krishna, as in the beginning he sort of just hints at, but then later on he explicitly says, and Arjuna also confirms, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What Supreme Personality of Godhead is sort of a terminology that needs unpacking, but ultimately it is what, for instance, Vedanta Sutra described, Janmadiya Sijataha, that from whom everything emanates. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Mataparataram Nanyat Kinchit Asti Dananjaya. He says, everything is dependent on me. Or Aham Sarvasya Prabhava. This Aham Sarvasya Prabhava is the same thing as Janmadiya Sijataha. So, and this of course answers a question which is not here, is, you know, if God created everything, who created God? It's sort of a standard question, but that's the basic definition. God is that person who doesn't, no one creates. If someone created him, then they would be greater. So creator is always greater or has more qualities than the actual creation. So No one created Krishna, but Krishna is the source of everything. So when Krishna says that Aham Sarvasya Prabhava, I'm the source of everything, that means he's the source of Brahma, Shiva, Indra, Vishnu, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, Narayan, Sarva. Sarva, everything means everything. Unless everything means everything, it's not everything. So, and in Vedic culture, the use of language is very particular. They don't use language very freely like we tend to do in our world today. But it's very particular because not only does the words have very specific meanings, but they have multiple meanings. And ultimately, essentially, the multiple meanings also say the same thing. So when Krishna says, Mata parataram na anyat. So there is nothing greater than me. That means na anya. There is nothing. There is nothing that is superior to Krishna. Nothing means also no one. And aham sarvasya prabhava. Prabhava means I'm the generator or I'm the origin. Sarva. When he says I'm the origin of everything, that means everything and everyone. So Krishna then is the speaker of Bhagavad Gita, and in terms of Srimad Bhagavatam begins in the first verse, says Param Satyam Dimahi. So this is the sort of the basic or introductory verse of the Bhagavatam, and it describes Krishna as Satyam. Satyam means absolute truth, which means Supreme Personality of Godhead. So absolute truth means that whatever he says is also absolute truth. So whatever you find in the Bhagavad Gita is true. Sometimes people say, well, all right, this was 5,000 years ago, if they give credence to it being spoken 5,000 years ago. Some Indologists would say, well, at the most 1,500 years ago or 2,500 years ago. But our Indologists say different. These are Indologists, some of whom maybe were in India once for a little while in an air-conditioned hotel. Our Indologists are the Acharyas who were born and bred, raised in India, and they also have their line of disciplic succession that goes back to Krishna. So we take information from them. Take from here, take from there. We take this source because we consider this source to be more authentic. So truth is always truth. You can't say, well, 5,000 years ago there was no gravity. There was gravity. It was always the same. 5,000 years ago, water was a mixture of hydrogen and oxygen, and it is today, and it will be in the future. Why? Because these things are truths, and these things are material truths. You can't even say they're absolute, because the law of gravity could change. In other places, on the moon, you have a different gravity. They're also gravity, but it's much less. So, it's the same. So absolute truth means past, present, future, it's always the same. It doesn't change. And that's what makes Bhagavad Gita, and that's what makes the Vedas very true. Now I just read that that in the end of, towards the end of the 19th century, in England, the law was that you were beheaded for sodomy. Now, if you try to deny homosexual employment, then they take you to court. So laws change. This is not the type of laws that we're talking about. This is called relative. But when Krishna says something, then it's absolute, and whatever he's saying is actually absolute truth. So this is Krishna's role, and Krishna is speaking. Why doesn't he speak longer? They're standing on a battlefield. And it is only so long you can sort of stall a battle. And of course, Arjun's in a dilemma. And now we're getting to Arjun. Arjun's in a dilemma, and that he doesn't want to perform his duty. It should be clear that the Kurukshetra war is not a religious war. It's not about religion. These people believe in something, those people believe in something else, and therefore it's about politics, which is what usually wars are all about, even when they're in the guise of, the politicians tend to use religion as a good excuse for fighting wars. So Mahabharata war is not about politics, but it's about who actually should be guiding people properly so that they can execute their prescribed duties and giving them suitable protection. And of course, why make such a big thing if someone usurps the throne? Actually, Duryodhan wasn't so bad. He wasn't such a, he was a bad person, but he wasn't a bad manager, and he wasn't a bad leader. He was relatively good. Because if you give the precedent that someone can unauthorizedly occupy a throne, then everyone else in the kingdom can unauthorizedly do anything else. So if it goes for the king, then it goes for everybody else. Why did Lord Ramachandra make so much, why did he cause such bloodshed over someone stealing his wife? Over just over one woman. Because if that then becomes the standard that anyone can kidnap someone else's wife, then without any type of repercussion, then for the sake of that principle, then yes, in order to maintain principle, we have to be willing to do the needful, whatever that needful particularly is. Because if you don't protect laws of dharma, dharma rakshati rakshitaha, if you protect dharma, dharma will protect you. So at cost of so much bloodshed, but if you don't protect dharma, there's going to be a lot more bloodshed. So just like we see in the adharmic world of today, that's all you read about is bloodshed. There's nothing else going on. The bloodshed caused to animals, human beings causing bloodshed to each other, is just endless. So that is part, that's why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about Chaturvarnyam Maya Shishtam, and he talks about Kshatriyas. There are those people who have that duty to protect dharma, even at the cost of violence. Violence can also be used for the sake of dharma. But that's another principle. We talked a little about Krishna. Let's talk about Arjuna. Why is Arjuna important? Well, first of all, Arjuna is, he is the sort of the impetus for the speaking of the Bhagavad Gita. Or at least this is the leela, or the pastime. Krishna is reacting. Arjuna's in a dilemma. What should I do? I'm in a certain situation where here are my relatives, and here are relatives, and as I said, after all, he's not doing such a bad job. Why do we all have to die? So this is a dilemma that everyone finds themselves in. Hopefully not extreme, because this is about as extreme as you get. But we always find ourselves in certain situations where life is not black and white, that situations are not very clear-cut. Okay, here's a Ravana and here's a Ramchandra. That's pretty clear-cut. But here's Bhishma Dev and here's Yudhisthira Maharaj. That's not clear-cut anymore. So here's Dronacharya, here's Kripacharya, and here's Bhim, and Nakula, and Sahadev. So how do I choose? Someone's going to die. They're definitely going to die in this war. So similarly, we are also very often in life situations, especially in Kali Yuga, where we have to choose between different situations in which they're not win-win, and it's not win-lose, but it always seems like lose-lose. But still, we need to know what is dharma. And Dharma has two aspects, at least the use of the word. One is Dharma in terms of religious principles, and the other is Dharma in terms of transcendental principles. And the transcendental principles supersede the religious principles, but the religious principles are generally servants of the transcendental principles. So Arjuna's in a dilemma, and now Krishna's answering his dilemma. He's solving Arjuna's problem. And of course, that's the beginning of the Gita, and then we come to the end of the Gita, where Krishna says, Arjuna says, Nasta Moha Smriti Brahma. Now my illusion is gone. Harishe Vachanam Tava. Whatever you say, I will do. Now, of course, Bhagavad Gita, in one sense, loses its meaning unless there's an Arjuna. In other words, Krishna's telling someone, and ultimately, what does he say? Sarva Dharma Aparityaja, just surrender to me. If there's no one who's going to surrender to Krishna, then what does Sarva Dharma Aparityaja mean? It has to be addressed to people. So here is Arjuna. Arjuna is actually the model, you, me, all of us. Is that ultimately he's showing what's supposed to happen when you understand the Bhagavad Gita, when you've actually read the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna says, Harishi Vachadam Tava, whatever you tell me, I'll do. So then he says, Mama Nushmarat Yudhyacha, all right, you remember me and you fight. So Arjuna is very important, and Arjuna fought. Now it's very interesting that, you know, this took place 32 years prior to Krishna's leaving the world. So Krishna was here 125 years. Arjuna is born in March, just a couple of weeks before me. And plus 5,000 years. And so March, and Krishna's born in August. So April, May, June, July, August. Arjuna's 7 months younger than Krishna. So Arjuna's 7 months younger than Krishna. 32 minus 125 is 93. So this is in Krishna's 93rd year, Arjuna's 93rd year. And 32 years down the road, Krishna leaves the world. Krishna leaves the world in Prabhas, and Dwarka sinks into the ocean, and Arjuna brings back the queens to Hastinapur. And when he comes back to tell Yudhisthira Maharaj that what happened, because he witnessed everything, he was there, Yudhisthira Maharaj had sent him there, then he says this, that Arjuna became completely overwhelmed by grief of Krishna's separation. But then he remembered what Krishna told him on the battlefield. And with that knowledge, he was able to steady his mind. So although Arjuna completely surrendered and did what Krishna said, and he fought the battle, and in the 18 days, the battle was over, but nonetheless, 32 years later, and one can imagine that in many times during that period, he felt Krishna's absence, he felt some type of difficulty. So whenever he did, he kept remembering the Bhagavad Gita, or he kept remembering relevant instructions from the Gita, which then allowed him to perform his particular duty in that time and circumstance. So Bhagavad Gita, therefore, is a tool. Now we've got Krishna, we've got Arjuna, it's Bhagavad Gita as it is. The real thing is, how is it that we're putting this Bhagavad Gita into our lives? And that's why it's so important to study it. That this is not just some kind of religious activity or a pious activity. It's like when we go to university, we go to school, we study something. Now, I went to university. I spent 6 years in university. There were two types of students. One who was just there trying to get through, and the other class who were there, who were really there to learn and to apply what they knew. Similarly, when we're studying Bhagavad, I was just going to say that those who were really applying themselves were either Chinese or Indians. And the rest of us, we were just having a good time, at least until exam time came around. But studying is not to get through to about getting through exams. It's about how are you going to use this in life. So if you're an engineer, it's not about getting through and then when it's time to build a bridge, then you just sort of try and figure it out and hope it doesn't collapse while you're working for the company. You have to know how to actually keep it up there, and you have to know your job well. Not to speak of if you happen to be a surgeon. So you don't want someone operating on you who just wanted to get through his exams. So similarly, when we're actually going through life, and in this day and age life is getting more and more difficult, more and more complex, it becomes sometimes unbearable, so we need instruments to get through that. Here we've got one question and motivational books. Yes, Seema was asking about motivational books. So people have motivational books that are in life skills and personality development. And some of these things may be helpful, but they're all very relative. They're not coming from a perfect source. So but here we've got perfect knowledge that applies to time, place, and circumstance. So it's not just about memorizing, because even in present day and better schools, especially where they teach Sanskrit, most children memorize the Bhagavad Gita. Has anyone here memorized the Bhagavad Gita in school? No? But they do. But memorizing the Bhagavad Gita and then unpacking it, how am I going to actually apply it in my life, in day-to-day life? And how do I really know this system of application? Oh, it's like if you have a wrench, and you have a flat on your car and you take it off. What happens if you give a little child a wrench? Well, he probably won't be able to lift it up. But if he does, then he just starts going banging with it. But it's not a hammer, it's a wrench. So banging with it doesn't work. You have to know how to use the thing in the right way. So similarly, using the verses of Bhagavad Gita in the right way, that really requires skill. And so Krishna says, Jnana vijnanam astikam brahma karma subhavajam. So jnana is to memorize the Bhagavad Gita, and vijnana is to know how to apply it and to know what it means. So I'm going to stop, because we've got 50 minutes, and I went around a half an hour. These are some introductory themes of the Gita, and the introduction is extremely necessary. You see how lengthy Prabhupada's introduction to the Bhagavad Gita is, again for the same purpose of getting the reader to understand what they're getting into. I'll just add one other thing for a minute. Generally in Vedic literature, there's always something called something that states the adhikar, or the qualification of the reader. Who is qualified to read this book? Like, something on law. Who's qualified to read books on law? Well, someone who certainly has pre-qualifications to understand those things. Who's qualified to read medical books? Well, you have to know biology, you have to know chemistry, you have to have been at least trained. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. So, a book on how to put a car together. You can read the words, but unless you know what a carburetor is and all these other things, it just doesn't make sense. It's just a word. So similarly, Bhagavad Gita requires adhikar. And adhikar means what is your pre-qualification for understanding this book. And so Prabhupada explains this pre-qualification. He says you have to have faith that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then Prabhupada makes a concession. He says, but a lot of people don't even know what Supreme Personality of Godhead is or what Krishna is. So they say, well, for Prabhupada says, for the purpose of reading the book, just assume, all right, what happens if Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? I give this sort of theoretical benefit of doubt, and then seeing what is it that this book has to tell me. So it requires faith, shraddha, ado shraddha. It's something that we all have. It's something that we use from one moment to the next in life. We're sitting in this house on the faith that it's not going to collapse. It's just implicit that we trust that this was built properly. When you all get in your cars, you're getting in your car on the faith that you're not going to have an accident today. You don't even think about it, but it's there. Otherwise, if you thought you did, you'd think twice, you'd call a taxi to take you home. So everything starts with faith. You get up in the bed, you put your feet out, have faith that my feet are going to hold up my body and I'm not going to just sort of collapse. Everything starts. So similarly, Shastra and entering into the realm of Bhagavad Gita has to also start with faith. We have to have faith. And whether that faith is somewhat realized or practical, or even if it's theoretical, but we start with that. And now let's see what Krishna has to say. Hare Krishna. Okay. We want the written questions first or the oral questions first? Anyone have any questions, particularly in what I said, maybe, to address that? And then we've got the ones that you see on the paper in front of you. And
you were mentioning something about transcendental qualities. In Dharma, there are two types, you say?
Yes, transcendental.
What would they be?
I'm making a distinction between religious principles and transcendental principles. So, a religious principle is in the towards the end of the war, Karna's chariot got stuck in the mud. Karna had to get off. The religious principle, which covers warfare, is that when a charioteer is off his chariot, you can't shoot him. The transcendental principle is that Krishna said, kill him. And then Karna said, this is against the laws of warfare. And Arjuna again had second thoughts, and Krishna then said, all right, where was your laws of warfare when you all attacked Abhimanyu? Where are your laws of warfare with everyone else? Because actually, in a fair fight, Arjuna wouldn't be able to defeat Karna, because Karna was superior to all of them. So, but when Krishna says something, that then becomes... So, of course, this is in this extreme case, extreme example. But there are also principles of, for instance, these principles of bhakti. Bhagavatam says, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatiya kinshanas. No. Devaishibhutaptaniramptrinam nakinkara nayanindri charajan. Now, Dharma says that we are, religious principles say, we have obligations to five people, five classes. We have obligations to our forefathers, we have obligations to the sages for the literature they gave, obligations to the demigods, to other people in general, other lower living entities. So these are the panchayagya that one has to actually do in order to obviate these type of debts that you have. But this verse says, but if sharanam sharanyam, but once you surrender to the Supreme Lord, then serving Him, you become free from performing these other sacrifices. So traditionally, people would perform these panchayagya, five sacrifices to satisfy, to fulfill their obligations to these five classes of living entities. That's religious principle. Now here it says, but if someone who's already surrendered to the Supreme Lord, who's the root of all existence, by serving Him, then that becomes a higher principle, and you automatically serve Him. Then you don't have to do those. So these things are there, and this is what the Gita starts with. Arjuna says, if we fight this war, then all these men are going to die. The women are going to be without a husband. Adharma abhivavat Krishna pradu shanti kula striya. And then there'll be Varna Shankara. He was right. But Krishna gave a higher argument. He said, yeah, but if you don't fight this war, you're going to have even higher, more problems aside from just Varna Shankara. So then that became a more urgent instruction. And even in terms of religious principles, there's a hierarchy. Some are lower and some supersede others. But transcendental principle, which is on the basis of surrender, Mame Kam Sharanam Braja. That's why ultimately Krishna says, Sarva Dharmam Parityaja, Mame Kam Sharanam Braja. Once you surrender to Krishna, in one sense, all other religious formularies and all other religious obligations are fulfilled. Because Vedarshya Sarve Raham. Because their purpose was to actually bring people and to come to Krishna. Is that all right? Someone else in regards to these two things, Arjuna and Krishna. Well, Arjuna's the perfect, he's the perfect student of Bhagavad Gita. He's the perfect disciple. Someone who hears Bhagavad Gita and says, all right, I'll just do whatever you say. And that's the message to us. That's Arjuna's message. Krishna's got his message, and Arjuna's got his message. And his message is, if you've really heard the Bhagavad Gita, like I heard the Bhagavad Gita, then you'll do whatever Krishna says.
If in this Kali Yuga, you are in the situation of Arjuna, so what should we do at that time?
If we...
In Kali Yuga, we are in the situation of Arjuna. So what should we do? We don't have Krishna with the at present that person with Arjuna.
Well, we have Krishna's words, and that's the absolute nature of Bhagavad Gita. We're not standing on the battlefield, because I don't know if you'd want to be standing on the battlefield. We're not standing on the battlefield, but this is one nature of Shabda, Shabda Praman, Anavritti Na Shabdam, is that Bhagavad Gita is not a book. This word, this concept of Shabda is different than just message, just a text message or some book that someone gives idea. It's living sound vibration. It's eternal, because Krishna says, Imam Vibhashyate Yomam, he says, I already spoke this, and this goes back 200 million years when Krishna spoke to the sun god. So this is living sound vibration, which means that Krishna will be equally accessible today here in Dubai as Arjuna was able to access him 5,000 years ago. We need to give ourselves over to Bhagavad Gita the way Arjuna did. So if we have that type of open attitude, so this shabda is not just words, and it's not information, but it's actually living knowledge, living transcendental knowledge. And that living transcendental sound vibration is so powerful that it actually manifests the person. And in one sense, even comprehension is not necessary. I'll just give the example of faith. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's Lord Chaitanya's biography, one of Lord Chaitanya's biography, but considered to be the most authorized. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat, these are the two. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya is in South India, he's in Rangakshetra, I think so, he's in Rangakshetra. And there's this devotee who is reading the Bhagavad Gita. He sits outside the temple. The thing is, he's illiterate. But his spiritual master said, every day you have to read the Bhagavad Gita. So he's sitting there and he just turns the pages and he looks at the Sanskrit. And in the meantime, he's crying. Lord Chaitanya says, everyone else, of course, the local Brahmins and Pandits, they make fun of him. Here's someone reading the Gita who can't read. So Lord Chaitanya said, why are you crying? He says, because I'm remembering Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's taking the role of a Shudra, which is a chariot driver of Arjuna. This is the role of a Shudra. He's taking the role of a Shudra for his devotee, and when I think about that, then I cry. So Lord Chaitanya said, yes, you really understand Bhagavad Gita. So he understood, even though he couldn't even read it, he understood it. And Gaur Kishordas Babaji once told one of his visitors, who said, can you, how will I know my swarup, my spiritual identity, my spiritual body? He said, you just look at the syllables of the Hare Krishna mantra, and if you meditate on the syllables, you'll realize your swarup. So just the nature of Shabda, the nature of Bhagavad Gita is such that it actually puts us in the presence of Krishna. And you can feel that presence of Krishna if we're in the right consciousness, which is Krishna consciousness. And if we're surrendered in the way that ultimately Arjuna said, all right, shisha hitam shalimam tam prapanam, you just tell me what to do. So it's a, and it's a very relevant point. This is something that people don't have experience. We have so much experience in the world today with different kinds of information, unlimited information that becomes irrelevant as soon as it's posted. It's already gone and something has changed. When we say that it's eternal knowledge, it's one factor that it's eternal, it's always relevant, but the other is that it's Krishna's voice, and because Krishna's absolute, Krishna can manifest from his voice in the way that he manifests Abhinatva Namanamino, from his name. Someone else about those? Should I go to these other